At Contra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Contra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are really grappling with something big. It's Soren Kierkegaard's masterpiece, Fear and Trembling.
It really is a profound text and incredibly challenging, too. We're diving straight into some core questions about faith, about individual conviction.
Right, what it really means to believe something.
Exactly. Our mission today is to unpack Kierkegaard's really unsettling central idea. What is authentic faith? And, you know, does it have to exist outside of, outside of reason, outside of ethics, as we normally understand them?
Yeah, and this isn't just some dusty old philosophy text, is it? I mean, this feels incredibly relevant for anyone, really. Anyone who's faced a huge life decision, the kind you just can't easily explain or justify to other people. It digs into that feeling of isolation when you make a choice based on deep conviction.
It absolutely does. It forces you to look at your own life, your own commitments, and ask, are you playing it safe within what everyone agrees is good?
Or are you willing to take that that lonely path for something more, something ultimate?
To really feel the force of the book, you kind of need to know a bit about the author himself. Soren Kierkegaard. He was born in Copenhagen, 1813.
Often called the father of existentialism.
Rightly so. He had this deep education in theology, knew Hegel's philosophy inside out that was the dominant system then. But he wasn't just an academic. He was shaped by this deep personal melancholy.
Yeah, a lot stemming from his family background, right? His father, the religious crisis.
Exactly. And he looked at these neat philosophical systems like Hegel's that tried to explain everything rationally.
And basically said, hang on, this doesn't capture my experience, my suffering, my choices.
Precisely. He saw philosophy trying to make Christianity comfortable, rational, sort of palatable, and he just wasn't having it.
And a lot of that rejection seems fueled by a really personal, painful decision he made.
Oh, definitely. His broken engagement to Regine Olsen in 1841, it was a huge turning point.
It made no sense socially. Everyone thought he was mad or cruel.
But for him, it was this collision between earthly love, social expectation, and what he felt was a higher private religious calling.
That tension, the finite versus the infinite, you can feel it pulsing through Fear and Trembling.
You really can. And interestingly, he didn't even publish it under his own name.
Right. He used a pseudonym, Johannes de Silentio, John of the Silence. Why do that?
Well, the name itself is part of the message, isn't it?
Yeah.
By calling himself the man of silence, Kierkegaard is signaling that the kind of faith he's describing, it's fundamentally incommunicable.
You can't explain it in ordinary language.
He can't defend it logically in the town square. He wasn't saying, look at me, I'm this knight of faith. He was saying, this is a profound problem, let's explore it. He forces you, the reader, to engage personally, subjectively. Yeah.
Okay, so let's get into that core idea. It's a big one. He argues that real, genuine faith requires something called the teleological suspension of the ethical.
Yeah, that phrase is a bit of a mouthful.
It is.
But the concept, when you break it down, the ethical is just the universal moral law, the rules that apply to everyone.
Like, don't kill, be honest, things society agrees on.
Exactly. And a telos is a purpose, an end goal, often a divine one in this context. So the suspension means, it means that sometimes an individual's direct duty to God, their absolute telos, might require them to step outside those universal rules.
To suspend the ethical for higher purpose.
Precisely. And the example he uses is deliberately shocking. It's Abraham.
Abraham being asked to sacrifice his son, Isaac.
Yes. From any normal ethical standpoint, Abraham looks like, a potential murderer, or maybe just delusional.
Right. An absolute moral whore, viewed objectively.
He's also held up as the father of faith, the ultimate example of religious commitment.
And that's the paradox Kierkegaard dives into. How can the greatest religious figure perform an act that seems like the greatest ethical transgression?
That contradiction is the engine of the whole book.
Oh, wait a second. This immediately makes you think. If faith means you can just suspend ethics based on some private command.
How is that different from fanaticism?
Exactly. How do you stop someone from claiming divine instruction to do something terrible? Doesn't this just open the floodgates to moral chaos?
That's the crucial question, and Kierkegaard anticipates it. He argues the true knight of faith isn't some smug fanatic. They act with fear and trembling.
Ah, hence the title.
Yes. They feel the immense weight of what they're doing, the ethical cost. And crucially, They act in silence and isolation.
Because they know the world won't understand.
Their justification isn't public. It's entirely private between them and God. It's rooted in that absolute personal relationship.
So true faith exists in this paradoxical space. He calls it the absurd. It means putting your individual, absolute duty to God above the universal ethical duty everyone else follows. It's a direct challenge to philosophies, like Hegel's, that try to neatly fit faith into a rational societal box.
Kierkegaard basically says, if your faith makes perfect logical sense and fits comfortably within society's rules, maybe it's not really faith at all. Maybe it's just certainty.
Okay, let's follow Johannes de Silentio, the narrator, deeper into the book. He starts the preface by saying he admires Abraham.
But he admits right up front, I can't do what Abraham did. I can't make those movements of faith.
Which is important, isn't it? He's not setting himself up as an example.
Not at all. He's showing the reader just how difficult, how almost incomprehensible this path is. It's an exercise in understanding the problem of faith, not necessarily celebrating it blindly.
And to show just how hard it was, Johannes retells the Abraham story four different ways in the Exordium, the Attunement section.
Yes. These hypothetical versions are fascinating. In each one, Abraham essentially fails because he tries to make the act. Well, less absurd.
Also,
well, in one version, he tries to deceive Isaac, maybe pretending he's a monster, to spare Isaac's faith in God, but then he becomes a liar.
Okay.
In another, he goes through with the motion, Isaac is spared, but Abraham comes back broken, unable to find joy. He's lost something essential.
So the point is, the real Abraham somehow managed to hold all these contradictions together.
Yeah.
Love Isaac, be willing to sacrifice him, and believe he'd get him back.
By virtue of the absurd, yes. These failed versions show how easily we slip into just resigning ourselves to loss, or using deception, or falling into despair when faced with something that defies rational explanation.
This leads perfectly into that famous distinction he makes, the tragic hero versus the knight of faith.
Right. And the key difference really boils down to, can other people understand your sacrifice? Is it legible?
Okay, explain the tragic hero first.
The tragic hero is someone like Agamemnon who sacrifices his daughter Iphigenia. It's a terrible act, but...
But it's for a reason everyone understands. To save the Greek fleet, to win the war, it serves a higher universal good.
Exactly. People mourn with Agamemnon. They understand his tragic necessity. They might even admire his difficult choice. His sacrifice is communicable. It makes sense within the ethical framework.
But the knight of faith?
Abraham?
Abraham sacrifices the ethical itself. He sets aside the universal rule, do not kill your son, for a duty that is entirely private, incommunicable.
If he tried to explain it, people would think he was mad.
Or monstrous. His greatness, his faith, exists solely in that private relationship with God, completely opaque to the outside world. He stands utterly alone.
That contrast really hits home. It makes you ask yourself, what motivates me? Is it the desire for public understanding and approval, like the tragic hero?
Or is it a deeper private conviction that might isolate me, like the knight of faith?
So drilling down further, we get to problema I. Is there such a thing as a teleological suspension of the ethical?
And Kierkegaard, using Abraham as the prime example, says yes. For the individual standing in that direct, absolute relationship with God, there exists a higher sphere where the universal rules don't have the final say. Which then raises the question in problema third. Was Abraham right to keep silent about it? Ethically defensible.
And again, Kierkegaard says yes. Because if Abraham had tried to speak, tried to justify his intended act using the language of universal ethics,
you would have been immediately condemned, misunderstood.
His duty, being absolute and paradoxical, required silence. It wasn't just him being secretive. It was the inherent loneliness of that kind of faith experience.
Like Johannes de Silentio himself.
Yeah.
You can't translate the absolute into the universal.
You have the heart of it.
Okay, let's zoom out a bit and pull together the core themes that run through this.
Mm-hmm.
The first, obviously, is the paradox of faith, the absurd.
Yes. The big takeaway here is that faith isn't about believing the probable or even the improbable. It's about commitment to the impossible. It's embracing contradiction with passion.
And it can't be smoothed over or explained away by reason.
Nope. It thrives precisely where logic fails.
And the psychological engine for reaching that state is what he calls the double movement.
Right. This is crucial. It's how the knight of faith operates internally. The first movement is something maybe we can all grasp, intellectually at least. infinite resignation.
Which means?
It means truly, completely accepting loss. Being willing to give up everything finite, like Abraham being fully prepared to lose Isaac forever. Resigning yourself to that finite reality. It's a noble, almost stoic move.
Okay, that sounds incredibly hard, but maybe achievable. What's the second movement?
That's the leap. After making that total resignation, the Knight of Faith performs the second movement, the leap of faith. They believe, by virtue of the absurd, that they will receive back what they resigned.
Not just hope for it, but believe it against all odds.
Believe it with passionate certainty, grounded not in logic, but in that absolute relationship. It's the joy found in the impossible becoming possible through faith.
Wow. Okay, another key theme is clearly this tension, individual versus universal.
Absolutely. Kierkegaard champions the individual. He insists that true authenticity often means standing alone, against the crowd, against the accepted norms. That struggle is timeless, isn't it? Between our personal calling and what society expects.
It really is. And grappling with these huge choices, this potential isolation, leads to the final theme, anxiety and dread, or angst.
Yes, and this is key. For Kierkegaard, this deep anxiety isn't a sign something's wrong with you. It's not a pathology.
It's a sign you're actually engaged.
Exactly. It's the natural, authentic response to facing ultimate freedom, ultimate decisions, especially before God. Feeling that dread means you're taking the weight of existence seriously.
The language itself in the book is just so powerful, too. It leaves you with these lines that stick in your head.
He was a master stylist. Let's touch on a few key ideas or phrases.
Okay, the one that sums up the core argument. The paradox of faith is this, that the individual is higher than the universal.
That's the direct challenge to putting societal norms or rational ethics above the individual's absolute duty.
Then there's, faith begins precisely where thinking leaves off.
A clear shot at anyone trying to make faith purely rational. For Kierkegaard, it's a passionate commitment, a leap, not a logical deduction.
I like this one about Abraham. Abraham believed by virtue of the absurd.
It captures that commitment despite the impossibility. That's what makes his faith so monumental. It wasn't based on evidence, but purely on the relationship.
And finally, echoing the title, the individual must stand alone before God in fear and trembling.
That really conveys the solitary, awesome, and frankly terrifying nature of genuine faith and the responsibility that comes with it.
It's easy to think of this as just abstract theology, but these ideas have real teeth, don't they? How do they apply in our lives today? We all have these personal Abraham moments, maybe.
I think we do. Maybe not as dramatic, thank goodness. But think about those huge life choices.
Like a major career change that seems crazy to everyone else. Or moving across the world, committing to a relationship where the future is totally uncertain.
Exactly. Decisions where you can't produce a spreadsheet proving it's the right move. You have to leap based on a deep internal conviction, even if you can't fully articulate why. That's a kind of secular leap of faith.
What about in a professional context, like whistleblowers?
That's a fantastic example. A whistleblower often acts like a knight of faith within an organization.
How so?
Well, they act on a deeply felt personal integrity, a sense of absolute duty to truth or justice, right?
Yeah.
And that duty directly clashes with the organization's universal ethic, which might be protect the company or don't cause trouble.
So their action is incomprehensible, even hostile to the system. They stand alone.
Precisely. Their justification is internal, often incommunicable, and they face condemnation from the universal. It mirrors Abraham's isolation.
And you mentioned infinite resignation earlier.
Yeah.
How might that apply outside of Abraham's specific test?
I think it's incredibly relevant to relationships. Think about parenting or any deep love. Infinite resignation, in that context, could mean loving someone, your child, your partner, completely, passionately, holding nothing back.
What?
But also being inwardly prepared to let them go, to accept their separateness, their freedom, even the possibility of loss without being destroyed by it. It's holding the finite preciousness of the relationship with kind of ultimate looseness.
So it prevents that love from becoming possessive or desperate.
Exactly. It allows for a deeper, freer kind of love, paradoxically.
As we wrap up this deep dive, what really stands out to me is how, well, how uncomfortable Kierkegaard makes us. He really challenges any kind of easy, comfortable belief system.
He absolutely does. He's not offering easy answers or warm fuzzies. He's demanding authenticity.
No.
What surprised me rereading it was just how sharp his critique of sort of institutionalized, comfortable Christianity still feels.
He wants to restore the difficulty, the fear and trembling.
Yes. And the necessity of that silence, that inability to fully explain your deepest commitments. The goal isn't to solve the paradoxes, but to deepen our engagement with them.
My final thought is just about the sheer courage it takes to live authentically in the face of that kind of uncertainty. He forces us to confront whether we value being understood more than being true to ourselves.
That's the choice, isn't it? The understood tragic hero, accepted by the universal.
Or the lonely knight of faith, silent, potentially misunderstood, but living out their absolute duty. It's a profound question to carry away.
It really is, a question for our lifetime, perhaps.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.